listening to Am I the Bowlcast, the only Magic the Gathering podcast you're listening to right now. What's up, bowlers? Time to grab the bowl by the horns. It's new intro time. You guys like that stuff? I have had a crazy week so far, and it's not even Tuesday. And I just got to say that we are excited about today. And by we, I need to shout out my co-host, super producer, super genius, Morgan Sanchez is with me today. Hi, Morgan.
Grab the bolus by the horns. That's what you meant to say. I don't know who the bowl is, but we have the bolus, and he's got horns too.
I just went the bowl, as in B-O-L, as in short for bolus. You know what I mean?
The Spanish word for ball. Thinking.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Well, grab the ball by the horns, everybody. Do it. That said, what am I doing? Morgan, how you doing? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm chilling. I'm killing. I have a stack of brand new Odyssey coils next to me. Life could not be better.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about those before we bring our guest into this, or do you want him to be part of it?
Of course. I don't want anyone but me to be a part of it. Okay. And this stack, look at this. You can see through the radio, folks,
that
this is a limited deck stack of brand new.
That's like 40
cards. They're censored, even.
They're censored
because
they're
not safe for work. They're so beautiful because they're so foil, and
you can see the foiling kind of shine through.
I can't even. Go. Look at all these guys. It's everybody.
What are some of the heavy hitters?
Let's talk about Limestone Golem and Unifying Theory. Second Thoughts. Always
Unifying
a good one.
Unifying Theory is so fun.
Bomb Squad. It's funny because in my adventures,
I've got a foil bomb squad too.
In my adventures collecting Odyssey foils, the hardest foils to get are the commons and uncommons because they were just shoved in a shoebox somewhere. All the rares look great, but like find me a nice mint non-foil cutline Aven Archer, impossible.
Very difficult. Also, should be noted, Limestone Golem, not technically a clue, but he's got clue text on it.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, it says target player draws a card. Never mind.
Ooh.
Never mind. Getting ahead of myself.
Yeah.
6-mana, 3/4, artifact creature, golem, 2, sacrifice it, target player draws a card. I mean, this was an uncommon.
Yeah.
And limited must have been crazy.
Power crept as heck.
I wish we could go back to those days and try to draft those things. Anyway, I will say that stack was fat.
Oh yeah.
And I have to assume that you got it from our proud sponsor, cardsphere.com. Get your cards here. Cardsphere, get your cards here. Cardsphere, get your cards here. What am I doing? Cardsphere.com. We've got a referral link. Make sure to check them out. Morgan slowly completing that Odyssey block foiling. And one of these days I'll make a pilgrimage out there and leaf through them like I'm in a museum I'm allowed to touch things at.
Yes.
Very special museum. Oh, what was that? Did you say something?
Nope.
No? Is this the world's weirdest intro?
Provided zero context to segue ourselves into bringing back our...
Our guest today is Michael Solani.
Hey, how's it going? I feel like it's been, 8 to 12 months? At least the length of one pregnancy, right?
Minimum.
How long has it been?
I mean, it's been since December or something like that, probably.
So that would be... That's
7 months.
That's like the... Okay, that's the length of a concerningly short pregnancy.
Why'd you have to tie it back to that? You had to go back to it?
I don't know. That's the one, Solani. You know, the politicians measure time in Scaramucci's. So what does it matter?
Quintorius.
Oh, you don't get that, do you? Because you're Canadian.
Quintorius canned exists, so could that be weirder, potentially? Because I think that could be weirder.
A pregnant elephant.
Why are we talking about this? Solani comes on the podcast again for like 30 seconds,
and we're immediately
talking about pregnant characters in games?
Pregnant elephants.
Pregnant Quintorius canned?
There's nothing wrong with me, I swear to God.
How do you bring this out of
the
people?
The only... Magic the Gathering podcast.
Yes, this is the only one.
The only Magic the Gathering podcast. The only singular. We are the only ones to ever do it.
All of the podcasts, none of them are about Magic except this one.
Exactly. That's why I brought
honestly,
it back. You're welcome.
Untapped market, we should be millionaires. Anyway, Michael, it's good to have you back, buddy. How you been? Things are good?
I've been fine, had a rough week. It's been a pretty rough week. We actually been trying to record this episode for like a week, right?
I was going to ask if you wanted to tell everybody.
I mean, it's fine. You know, I had a bad reaction to a shot. So I ended up in the ER, and I'm going to be honest, the most stressful thing about it now is knowing that I owe somewhere between zero and like $12,000. And there is like no way to know what it's going to be unless I wait like 3 weeks. It's very concerning.
Me and my card sphere cart.
Your card sphere cart is between zero and $12,000.
It can be. Morgan's.
Let's talk about averages. Yeah.
Morgan's well, I mean, hard. I was trying to look at those censored Odyssey foils you had, but they were too censored. I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
They were not safe for wallet. NSFW. Yep.
Better believe
hey.
It.
Hey.
Yeah.
I know that. So this is, we're doing things a little different today on this episode because obviously this is the first time we're doing a guest interview where the guest, first of all, is a former co-host of the show. And also Morgan's here for the interview part. And we're just talking. I think what we're going to do is just be very loosey-goosey about it. Do you, like, I'm going to ask you, Solani, what do you think? Do you want to begin with a story or pet peeve and get into talking about Edge of Eternities, or do you want to chat about the new stuff? Because this is going up next week.
You are really putting me on the spot here, buddy.
I mean, yeah, I am. You're the guest.
But
what's
you're
your
the host.
Favorite color?
I'm only a former. My favorite color is white, actually.
See, that's how you get that. It started. Come on, Carosa. We're interviewing this guy. This is how we got to break the ice. Like, what's your favorite color?
Like, I don't mean that in like a magic sense. White is my favorite magic color, but white is also my favorite like actual color.
Fun fact.
Yeah.
I had no idea that was possible. I thought that was like not allowed.
Hold on, what? Yeah. It's not allowed?
White doesn't feel like it's a color. It feels like the absence or rather the presence of all of them at once.
Well, let me tell you this. What color does the most goddamn work? It's white. Don't take this in like a weird way, guys. I mean, like the walls, paper, stuff like that. It's a good accent color.
You're right. That's fair. Yeah. But it's okay. I mean, I'm not about to argue about color with you. We were talking about a card game, and then you went with the actual colors. It's a good accent color. Yeah, the trim on my doorways are white. My doors are white, but the walls here are blue, baby.
It's like one of those things you don't think about until you notice it everywhere, and then you can't stop thinking about it.
And
you know?
So you build.
I walk into a room and I'm like, "Friggin' white! It's everywhere again."
Man, my favorite color is purple, and when I see it, I like that.
That's a good color.
That's usually the response to color people liking their favorite color. Not that they're haunted by it.
They got a justification.
Into a room.
I take the flask and I unscrew it and I just take a swig of the bourbon and I'm like, everywhere I go.
There she is. You know, so now that we know your favorite color, what do you want to do about it? Like, do you want to talk?
What do I want to do about it? Like, it's a problem.
I've made a decision. Edge of Eternities. Let's talk about it. It's the new set. When this comes out, pre-release weekend will have just happened. It's fresh. I haven't gotten to play the cards yet. I've been doing mock drafts online, and it's been interesting to see the cards and go, I have no idea what to do with this set so far. I have no idea. It looks cool as all hell, though.
I looked at the cards, and genuinely it feels like I can't even tell what the draft archetypes are, and that's like never happened to me before, right? Because every last set, Final Fantasy, was like really obvious. So you had the Gruul was Landfall, and the Azorius was Artifacts, and the Rakdos was Wizards, and the Simic was bad. But like you could do all of that, and you could figure it out.
The Towns deck was bad. It enabled three colors. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was so. The two colors were so bad that you had to add a third color for it to be even remotely relevant.
Oh my god! A key that unlocked the forbidden door gets opened by a color combination, and you call it bad. That's insane. I mean, Sultai in Final Fantasy was wild. Anyway.
Mikey, you're a comedian. You should know that that was a setup. You know, I was listing things, and then the last one was going to be the punchline.
I know structure. It's the middle of Just for Last Festival, and I'm performing on it. I'm aware comedy. Mm. But also, we're talking aware about of game. Comedy. We're being serious. Yeah, I'm familiar
Mike Carrazza, with comedian. I'm aware of comedy.
I'm aware of comedy.
I know structure.
Structure's available to us all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll say I agree with the idea of like not knowing the archetypes and not being able to pick it out. But I do think that there's a lot of, first of all, the art is gorgeous. It's like, it's got like a nice balance between neo-futuristic and also like hearkening back to what old-timey futurism looks like. You know, those
Zerust sort of things. I haven't seen any of that actually, but more like old Star Trek or old Star right. Wars.
Or like the old pulp book treatment that they're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Like the special guest cards in here are sick, and
oh yeah,
yeah. A lot that of ancient it's really
tomb
sweet.
Is just mint.
Ooh, baby! Don't even get me started on that ancient tomb that I'm never gonna buy or play. But yeah. My God, it's gorgeous.
Don't worry, you'll open it. It'll be okay.
Yeah,
you'll just open it.
Yay!
My luck, Solani. I'll open it.
I'll
open it. That's it. I'm not gonna open three creeping tar pits I can't use. I'll open Ancient Tomb, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff on the bonus sheet. And then there's also like the commander cards are sick. The standard cards are interesting. Is there anything? How about we go around the bend? Everybody pick one card that they're stoked about. That like I just said that. What came to mind? You know?
For me, it's obviously the Lobster Citizen, right? The Zoidberg.
Zoidberg?
It is yeah. Zoidberg, right? Ragos, that's the. Deft, that's him. The.
Ragost,
that's the joke.
Deft gastronaut.
Mm-hmm. Makes Lofta artifacts, citizen. Foods.
Yeah, literally a 2/2 for Boros, so white, red. Artifacts you control are foods in addition to their other types and have 2 tap, sack this artifact, gain 3 life. Turns them into a food with the food text. 1 and tap, sack a food. Ragost does 3 damage to each opponent, and then at the beginning of each end step, if you gain life this turn, untap Ragost. Buddy, what are we even doing here? It's a burn deck, but it's also an artifact deck, but it's also a life gain deck. It's so interesting.
There's so many ways you could take it. I want to put him, the thought that comes to mind, and I know this is terrible, but I want to put vehicles in it, and just for the image of the idea of eating cars, I just want to eat some cars, dude. Just like, get a car, put it on the plate, eat it.
You wouldn't eat a car. You wouldn't eat a car. Try me.
What car do you think would be the most delicious, Mike?
Great question.
Instant ramen. Next question.
That's not a car, though.
That's a car.
Uh-oh.
No, we want a car, like a Mitsubishi.
Like a smuggler's copter?
God knows, like a person, though. I don't know. For some reason, it's like a little guy.
Yeah. You go first.
I'm looking at vehicles. I'm gonna pick the most delicious looking vehicle.
Let's find some
out
cars.
Of all 174 of them.
What do you think the Cybertruck tastes like?
Sadness and failure as a society failure. And race, human race.
Mm-hmm. A societal failure and then like a failure to spend your money wisely.
I would rather eat the nutrient block than that thing.
I mean, say goodbye to your teeth or say hello to them in your brain once you try to clamp down on that thing. That thing looks disgusting.
Man, I got a crown too. All these medical expenses, man. You're lucky that you live in Canada. Nothing costs anything there and everything's great.
Dental ain't covered. Don't be acting like we got everything figured out. We're still a f***ed up country. Sorry, Ken.
You figured out everything else, but those teeth, you don't know what to do with them.
No, they're in your head, part of your body, definitely medical related.
It's just like your eyes. They're like second class citizens.
It's dumb. Yeah. I decided on a vehicle that looks delicious, and I'm going to go with the Enchanted Pumpkin. What's it called?
It's a pumpkin that's enchanted.
Yeah, Enchanted Carriage from Throne of Eldraine. Literally just a pumpkin car. Cop out. Anyway.
It's not a food vehicle, is it?
No, it's not.
I think one of the lands from like one of the Gavin events was like a food vehicle land,
like a hot dog car
or something.
Yeah. Oh, well, there was that, but then it's Veggie Wagon also had one.
Because when I was in Chicago I live in Chicago, but when I was at Magic Chicago, MagicCon Chicago, I was in the event or in the panel where they were trying to come up with cards for that event, and someone suggested it. I suggested a Lucid Sliver, which I 100% think should have gotten in.
You would. You haven't changed a bit. You're still all about the exact same thing right here, buddy.
I'm just saying that giving all of your slivers the Lucid ability would be fantastic.
All Lucid all the time.
I'm noticing a bit of doubt from both of you here.
The Lucid and slivers combo?
Yeah.
Why not? ¿Por qué no los dos?
I need to know how many people love Lucids these days. It's got to be like just you, man.
Me. It's me. Mean,
the thing is, Lucids technically don't work with the rules, and so they can't just keep doing them, but I do love them.
They work with the rules. They just work in a really weird, awkward way that no one wants to put any effort into understanding.
Uh-huh. Like me.
To be honest, I also work in a really weird, awkward way that no one wants to put any effort into understanding. Ladies.
Let's keep going down some of this Edge of Eternity stuff. Morgan, do you have anything that stands out to you that you quite like?
So in terms of vibes, because I'm all vibes with all the cards, it's this Memnon, the right hand jellyfish advisor guy. This looks like a real Memnon.
Yeah. Memnon, the right hand, 3 blue legendary jellyfish advisor, 3/4 flying. You may look at the top card of your library anytime. You may cast artifact spells from the top of your library, and artifacts you control have tap, add blue, spend this mana only to cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand.
What did I say about this guy in my jank rank? Oh, yeah, I said he was discount Urza.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. But cool vibes nonetheless.
Alien jellyfish guy is exactly what I wanted from the set, and we got him as a legendary creature, so I'm happy with it. In terms of vehicles to eat, though, going back to that, because I was looking for a snack, I think something like Boosted Sloop doesn't look like it'd be edible, but it sounds like a British dish.
Yeah.
Like, come here, take your Boosted Sloop. I've got me boosted soup.
Go down
soup.
To the pub and get yourself some boosted soup.
It's exactly, yeah. It's exactly my first thought was like, you know what? And maybe that sounds good. Like sometimes they
it
sound
like
good.
Slang.
Yeah. Yeah. The boosted soup would be kind of crunchy in
it's
that
either,
lovely
is
it
It's
way.
Either a food or like slang for some sort of disease you just definitely do not want to catch. Boy, I got the boosted sloop. I can't come into work today.
I think
you haven't been able to say it properly once, the amount of times you said it.
Boosted sloop.
I think that just goes to show how genuinely incredible it is. You can use it for everything in many different pronunciations.
It's definitely like some sort of extremely bland, like bean slurry, like
bean
that, like. That the
bean
paupers
slurry.
Eat because they're busy, they're too busy in the mines for old man Ebenezer Scrooge. Why do we have to treat them right? Just give them the sloop and they can go back to work.
Give them the sloop.
All right, I suppose I should find a tasty looking vehicle that looks really good to eat. The head shredder would probably be okay if it was not like completely robotic. Like, if that was just an actual straight-up crustacean, that might look delicious.
That looks the most like farming equipment out of anything I've seen on this list, and it could not be further away from anything I want near my mouth. I think it's insane.
Am I the only one that looks at this art
eye.
And sees crab?
Time for crab. We
I
don't
see
judge
spider.
Here, right?
It's spider.
You're not
no,
the
we
boldest.
Judge. It's
spider.
Literally the point of the podcast. We
spiders
judge.
And crabs are the same thing.
Uh-oh. Spiders and crab are different.
100%.
One goes in mouth, one doesn't.
Would you eat, like, cooked insects?
Probably not.
Of course.
Probably not. Oh, no. we've got a split here. That means one of us has to come in and figure out who's the bolus and who isn't.
Yeah, we gotta do the vote.
No one's a true Ugin in this scenario.
Nope.
Impossible. I'm looking at more Edge of Eternity's cards, and the ones that come to mind, of course, are ones that people are excited for, like Ragost, like Servandum, what's it called? Servandum Sunstar Exemplar. I will say, personally, of the cards, I find myself looking at Requiem Monolith a lot, but not knowing what to do with it. Requiem Monolith is 2 and a black artifact. Tap until end of turn, target creature gains. Whenever this creature is dealt damage, you draw that many cards and lose that much life. And that creature's controller may have this artifact deal 1 damage to it. Activate only as a sorcery. And so you're basically, you're sending something off into battle and saying, hey, if you block this, I'm going to draw a bunch of cards, you know, or you're hoping that it's enough of a reason to deter your opponents from blocking. But it makes me think of my Savine, the Chronoclasm Brash Taunters deck, where I have Blasphemous Act type of wrath, you know, damage wrath and stuff. And that'd be pretty fun if I could play it in those colors.
Isn't there a black commander that says it just taps and a creature deals damage to itself equal to its power?
Kiku Knight's Flower, I think.
Yeah. Did you know that just off the top of your head? Well done.
Yeah. Yeah, she's one of the commanders that I've looked at as like, I would love to build this commander, but then I think, why? You know? Like, I think it's just a wild ability to put on a 2-mana 1/1. It costs 4 to do. And a tap. It's just so much mana and no protection, but also it requires your opponents to have creatures. But I think this Requiem Monolith is, you know, exactly going right into this deck, you know?
Yeah, for all the, let's take a look at the rankings here. For all the 85 people who play it, this is your dream.
86. Maybe I'll take a stab at it. I'm opening up Archidect and clicking new deck right now.
Or maybe Kiku will make you take a stab at yourself for how much power you have. Don't worry, it probably won't kill you. You definitely have more toughness than power, just looking at you.
Wow, how dare you?
Savage,
you just called me a fat ass like nothing?
It's a compliment.
A fat ass weak boy? Jeez. You've been gone from the podcast and you're like...
Mike, you're at least a 2-3. I'm saying you have at least as much power as grizzly bears. Think about that.
At least? Okay.
I'd be like a solid 1-2. So, I mean, or 1-3 even. Let's be real.
Buddy, I'd venture to say that I probably would be a 1-6.
A 1-6?
With Defender or what? We just 1-6 in?
Hell no.
Are there any 1-6s?
Yeah, they probably are. Like
let's see who you have in good company. Power 1, toughness 6. God, Scryfall is slow right now. Oh, you could have the same power and toughness as Nimriss, the fairy knight.
Oh, is that literally it?
Yeah, you could be the fortress crab. You could
be
crab.
What? Be crab. Okay. Corrosive crab.
I'll be crab. I think I'll be crab.
You could be 2 crabs. There are 2 crabs that are 1-6. Wow. Mm. The Crystation. Are you a Crystation?
Crystation? No.
Yeah, it's from Ikoria, apparently. It's like a 3 and a blue for a 1-6 grab of flash.
That's fun.
Oh, Crystation. I thought it was like a really sad crab. It was just very depressed and it's crying.
It's crystal.
Well, I completely misread that.
Speaking of misreading, I have been reading and rereading Starwinder from Edge of Eternities, and I need help. It's 5 blue-blue for a creature Leviathan 7/7. You can warp it for 2 blue-blue. And whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw that many cards.
I have to keep telling myself that warp doesn't give haste.
No, it doesn't. It's brutal.
I keep looking at it and I'm like, man, this would be incredible as a turn 4 play if it goes back. But
well, I mean, you could. There's no way.
Like, yeah.
The thing is, you play Starwinder, and it's kind of one of those cards that you're like, do I dare include this in a deck that's drawing that many cards? Like, it feels like this has to be on the back end. Like, you need to be defending with this thing, right? You can't be swinging out, like, hitting your opponent for 19 when they're at 20 and then drawing your whole deck and being like, whoops.
You can draw too many cards, bam. Can draw too many cards.
Yeah, this feels like one of those like 7-mana sorceries that draw you 4 cards, but then don't your turn is over and then you lose. It's like one of those, right?
Whew. I love those.
It's just really good. It's really cool and it's really good. I'm interested in seeing what comes out of this set and what sticks around, because like there's some real staple-y stuff like Starfield Vocalist, which is just like Panharmonicon or better Panharmonicon because it's a permanent, not just artifact creatures on a blue creature that even has warp itself. Like you can just use it for a turn and hold on to it for later. And there's a lot of really cool stuff in this set, and I'm really excited about seeing what else makes its way into my decks. Like right now I have my eye on a couple of the commander specific cards, like Evendo Brush Razor for Prosper, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I've come to the conclusion that Wizards is just trying to outright overprint the things that are like chases, like token doublers. They're printing a lot of them.
Yeah.
Panharmonicons, they're printing a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I think they're just trying to get ahead of the fact that they're always expensive and always hard to get by like putting one in every set. Because at the start of the trend, I was like, oh, they're doing this just to make a bunch of money, right? I mean, two things can be true. They're doing this just to make a bunch of money and make people buy their cards. But now I feel like it's gotten to a point where they're so ubiquitous that it's kind of like pressuring everything downward. Because it's like you could try and spec on these things or whatever, or just try and open it. It's just going to show up in the next set anyway. So you don't have to worry too much about it. Yeah.
I'll say this, you know, Wizards has been doing this thing where it reprints effects. Like we have a land that's basically Gaia's Cradle when you station it enough, or Talarian Academy when you station it enough. But the red card from this cycle, Michael, I know you have some feelings about Kavaron Memorial World, a land planet that says this land enters tap to add a red station, and then at 12 plus counters on it when you station it, which is to tap another creature you control and putting charge counters equal to its power on this planet, you can pay one in a red, tap it, sacrifice a land, create a 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token, then creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain haste until end of turn.
Oh yeah, that card is ass.
Like, tell me more.
It's just straight up ass. So here, let's set the stage here. The other four cards in this cycle, white creates a token copy of artifacts and enchantments, I believe. Blue is Talarian Academy.
Blue is Talarian Academy,
Black is a Shadow Heart activation, more or less. You sacrifice a creature and then you draw cards equal to either power or CMC. I can't remember
it's
which.
It's power.
It's power.
Mm-hmm.
Then green is Gaia's Cradle.
Yep.
And what red gets in this space is basically like Hammer of Purphoros, but you have to give up 12 power to do it. Why would you want this? Why would you spend so much time doing nothing?
Well, you get to it eventually. It's not like you don't have to like station it all at one go.
Ah, but red, the color of you get to it eventually.
I know, that's exactly it. But we do have a Jund precon about lands and sacrificing lands, and I guess this is like, hey, your land gives haste and stuff and still allows you to sacrifice the land. Feels like that's a decent home for it, but literally, I cannot think of anywhere else where I could put this.
Frankly, I'm mad at the Jund precon too, to be honest.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm very upset about it.
Tell me more.
So there's Sorail, right? Is that how you pronounce it? Genesis Shepherd?
Yeah, sure.
The world's most biblical sounding thing? Genesis Shepherd. My little lambs. Anyway, it's this insect druid. It's for Windgrace mana, so that's 2 in Jund. Mm-hmm. You get flying 2/5 insect. It's a Crucible of Worlds, so you play lands from your graveyard. Whenever you sacrifice another non-token permanent during your turn, put a number of counters equal to its power on up to one other target creature, right?
Well, put on equal to Zeril's power, not the necessarily like if you have a creature, you sacrifice it, put it somewhere.
Right. I mean, I had a Zask deck that basically did this, right? Mm-hmm. It was a Crucible of Worlds in the command zone. And Zask is a card that mostly cares about insects. So people use it to play like insects from the graveyard. And then you run over your opponents with a bunch of insects because it could give insects death touch. But because you could also play lands from the graveyard, my deck was all about getting fetchlands out of the graveyard, getting multiple land plays, getting tons of landfall triggers, and building a landfall deck that doesn't deal with just shitting out a bunch of tokens, for lack of a better way to describe it. It's like every landfall deck is Scoot Swarm, Rampaging Baloths, five different ways to make three threes. It's like everything goes wide. And I wanted the one deck that was like, okay, I'm going to put in that equipment that's like, you get plus two when a land enters. And I'm going to hit you with a guy who gets big when you play a bunch of lands. It's not going to have 50 million tokens. It's going to just kill someone. And now there's this deck, which is just better in every way. And it's like a...
Oh, wow.
It's like a pre-con face commander. And I'm like, well, what is this? Where does this leave me with my pre-existing deck? You know, I have no reason to run Zask anymore. I feel like they plagiarized me, buddy.
Okay, well, I have feelings about this. Because you have the deck built. You built the deck real nice. You like your deck a lot, that enough to be offended by the fact that they made a different deck that's very similar and, you know, it has improved on it. Doesn't preclude you play Gabriel Angel Fire, for Christ's sake.
Nothing has beaten Gabriel Angel Fire. Hold on, buddy.
No. But what I'm saying is you picked a commander and it's been outclassed, quote unquote, and you can still play it. That's we have to remember the beauty of the game. We were just talking about 86 players who play Kiku Knight's Flower. You know what I mean? Like, there are people out there making these decks. There are people out there playing cards that are just because they like them. You like Zask enough to have built it. I don't know if this deserves the ire you're throwing at it. Although,
but part of the thing that makes me upset about Zask is I feel like the reason I enjoyed it was because of its uniqueness. And now that that's been undermined, like, the enjoyment is getting sucked away from it.
I mean, you can still be unique about it. Like, you're not playing the Jund deck that's doing the same thing. Now you're doing it in Golgari. You're doing it as with Zask only. I'll say this. I put together my Grixis Upkeeps deck of the Ninth Doctor and Clara Oswald, six, 7 months before Outlaws was spoiled. And Obeka, Splitter of Seconds, was spoiled. And people were like, oh my God, we got to build her. And then she was all over the place before people were like, yeah, it's not the kind of deck I really thought it was going to be. And they took it apart. You know what I mean? You know, you don't see many Obekas anymore is what I'm saying. At least
that's
kind of
weird. It was a flash in the pan when you think about it.
Yeah, because it doesn't do the thing that you're excited for when it comes to upkeep triggers and like enchantments that trigger on your upkeep. Doing them all at once isn't as fun as, okay, I have two or three, and then I have many things that trigger off those two or three. Instead, you have to go through combat, hit somebody, get those triggers.
And then win, you know.
Yeah, you beat somebody up. Like, you kill somebody, and you're like, whoops, sorry, I just wanted to draw a bunch of cards with Mind Unbound. I didn't mean to kill you. It's like, yeah, well, too bad. Like, you did. You just lost, too, because you decked yourself. And either way, I think Zarel is really interesting. First thought I thought, though, was like, that last line of text kind of reminds me of Jenova a little bit in the sense that whenever you sacrifice another non-token permanent during your turn, put a +1/+1 counters equal to Zarel's power onto one other target creature. Put that on Jenova. Get Jenova real buff.
Mother
put
mentioned.
All Jenova's, put Jenova's counters on Zarel and turn him into a little mutant guy, huh? Then guess what?
You assume guess I have what? Enough dice for this.
Yeah,
you know how many times you just said counters in like two sentences?
Yeah, but at a certain point you got to start using a piece of paper or an infinite token, right? Like that's you just got to use numbers.
and shout out to infinite tokens for making the best token, so that I don't have to have 1,000 dice for when Rosa pulls this insect Jenova combo on me.
Oh no!
I got
at some point you just have to be done, though. Yeah,
you're tired of counting. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this, Infinite Tokens, not sponsored, love them the bits. Don't get fine point markers for your Infinite Tokens. You put enough pressure on those things, you'll dent those babies and end up with a really bad caricature of Fred Durst on one of your tokens that you can't get rid of anymore. So, you know, don't do that. Use software.
That should be
tips.
Like a Patreon exclusive. Like, you should mail that out to somebody. Fred Durst token.
It's bad. You can barely make it out. It just says Durst on a cap, and it's a guy looking mad.
You can barely make out the Peanuts comic on the original medallions, but that doesn't mean that it's not there.
I love that. That's a fun
Or was it program. The diamonds? I forget if it was medallions or the diamonds.
I want to say it's the medallions. I think it was like Ruby Medallion in German or something.
Yep.
I think I have.
What a throwback.
I think I have one of those, actually. I should check in my binder.
You definitely should. Michael, are we ready to get into your your story.
I suppose so.
Or your pet peeve.
We've been on the edge of eternity for a long time here. I'm sick
okay,
of
okay okay. This I'm is sick why you're being you're on the edge now.
Yeah.
This is why you can't show up here and do that and think, oh, I better come back for more.
You're the one that invited line. Me on.
There's that
I was
structure.
On this show for what, like 20 episodes or something. You knew what you were getting into.
I invited you on. Fact, definitely did.
Actually,
but
I invited my.
Didn't ask.
I invited myself. I said, if you would like to, you could. You know.
And I did. Yeah, I did.
Not like invite me on the show where we're not friends anymore.
Yes, that's exactly how it would be, right?
I was like, oh my god, I can't believe what Mike did. What Mike and Morgan did to me. It's like,
uh-oh.
I'm just kidding.
Uh-oh.
I'm just being like a gossipy, like I'm imagining myself sitting in one of those like chairs with the big hair dryers, you know, in one of those like barber shops, and you're talking to all the other like middle-aged ladies, and you're like, oh my god, can you believe what Deborah did?
exactly
it's always
how
a
it
Deborah.
Is.
Every
it's
time
always a Deborah.
You gotta deal with the Deborahs.
But let's talk about my own personal Deborah.
I would love to talk about your Deborah.
So the one thing that takes me right out of a game is people whose mood visibly worsens when they start to lose.
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Mm. Oh yeah, you're playing a game. You go into a 4-player game with the expectation that 3 of the 4 players are going to lose,
and they're aware of this.
And yeah, in theory, they're aware of this, right? Mm. In practice, it's like, it can't happen to me. I'm good at this game. Everyone else is just an NPC, you know? They go in, they're planning to win, and then they don't win, and then they're just getting like frustrated, they're getting tilted. It's like, this game has no stakes, buddy. It's like, you don't have to... Does it really matter if you're going to waste 30 minutes here versus 30 minutes like doom-scrolling blue sky on your phone, right? So when someone gets taken out of the game for that, and I mean like they're playing the game,
sure,
they had like a good shot at it. Like I understand if someone doesn't get to play and they draw blanks and they don't get to do anything. That sucks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if someone had really an opportunity to play and then they just get outplayed or something happens to them that makes them lose and they just start being like, I'm done with this. This is terrible. I hate this. I dislike this. You know, that could really like sour my mood. I'm talking about this in specifically with like strangers, because sometimes I have friends who can get that way too, but it's like, you know, you've got a good rapport with them, you know, it's not gonna like ruin their day or anything, you know, you know what to say to like pick them up afterwards. But it's like with people you don't know, it's like I'm sorry, I you know, the experience you had with me was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that with the people you know, you can kind of joke about it a little bit more, or you know how to navigate that a little bit easier. There's always that element of like, okay, we'll do it next game. You know what I mean? I will say this is something I've been guilty of in the past, where you're like, it's fair to like complain about what's going on, and if you're not having fun, you're not having fun. Like it's you know. It's a game and you're supposed to have fun, or, you know, hopefully you are, and hopefully it's not hard to come by. And if it is, then there's some examination to be done about what you're up to in the game. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely like, if we're playing a game and you're doing everything to like just board wipe every turn, and I look at everybody and I go, does anybody want a scoop? Or, and they're like, no, we're going to play this one out. And it's the only game available. There's no other game I can join next to anybody. I'm going to be bummed. I'm going to be like, okay, I think this sucks. I'm going to be sourpuss about it. But that's a very specific, like, shitty thing to experience, you know? Sorry,
Ken. I mean, I understand that. This is going to be a bit of a hot take, but, like, my perspective from that is if you feel like you're having a shitty time, sorry, Ken, like, the solution is to not feel like you're having a shitty time. Like, I understand that's not how people work, right? You can't just turn off your brain being like, oh, I hate this. But I think you can make an effort, and I think like faking it to that extent does help. at least a little bit, right? Sure. You know, if you try and stay in good spirits, it'll be easier for you to make a better impact than is mm-hmm. than versus if you like were just being outwardly like sour about it, right?
Oh,
like
totally.
you could still hate what's happening, but it's just like, this is 30 minutes of my life, you know? This is not the end of the world.
I'll say that's where that, you know, early on when I was playing and I wasn't playing so well and I'd get knocked out or something, part of the fun was also being like looking at the board and searching for interactions and kind of like, you know, not necessarily being the judge for the table, but kind of just being like the tracker, finding new ways to have fun in the environment, you know. If you're not having a good time, trying to find a way to make sure that you do have a good time. The trouble with that is that some people's idea of a good time and pivoting to it is like disruptive in a way that's frustrating, you know?
Yeah.
We're like, now I'm going to play some chaos cards, or like, I'm going to start pointing all my removal at one person, you know?
But that's like a different problem, right?
Sure.
Like being maladaptive is a different problem than just being like upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you have to do it in the correct way, obviously.
So what would be the correct way? If somebody is having a bad time, you and I are playing, I'm comboing off, I'm taking a little while, it's nothing's advancing, but I'm monopolizing time.
I mostly just try and like, I keep a good attitude, I try and follow what you're doing. You know, if I do have some sort of counterplay, I will attempt to look for the counterplay, but I understand that sometimes that's just not how it works. There was a guy that I used to play with at the game store that would always build these incredibly protective, grindy value decks. You know, stuff like Council of Four, but it would be backed up with all of these counter spells. Totally. It would be backed up with like Esper Sentinel and Rhystic Study. Everything that just ensures that you never run out of interaction. And it was a slog to get through because you could never reliably make any progress against them because they were always playing so defensively that you couldn't, like, you could try and trade one-to-one with them, but they were so quick with their draw that it would always be a losing proposition for you. And the only way really through that is to hit a person like that super early before all of that can get up. And the only way you would know to do that is if you had prior knowledge that this is the type of thing that was going to happen. So if you do that, it feels like you're targeting someone, and that feels super, like, shitty. Because the person will complain to you about it. They're like, why are you targeting me? It's like, I know what you're trying to do.
And then is that when you're saying that their demeanor, if their demeanor shifts there to be like, I'm having a bad time because somebody's figured out my game, you know?
Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. Or like, when someone, I guess these are more examples of what not to do, but there's been a games where it's like, I've been winning and I'm ahead and, you know, someone starts playing the rules a lot more strict than they were previously. They would flash in a creature that's like removal, right? They would flash in, it would remove a thing. And I obviously know what they're attempting to target, right? So I play the removal spell. Or I play the protection spell, and they're like, I'm going to do this. It's like, well, obviously you were going to blow up my thing. It's like, you didn't do it at the right time. I'm like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
It's like there's clearly something that was, there's clearly an understanding that was meant to happen, and now you're exploiting the fact that it's technically not correct to try and claw some leverage back. And that's not the vibe I want.
Yeah. That does remind me of like this one time I was at a pre-release at an LGS, and some, this was a kid though. He was like learning the game and then making a lot of mistakes and taking a lot back. And then I was like, yeah, go for it. That's not a problem. And then late in the second game, I had won the first game. He could win in the second game. Rather, I could win in the second game. And I was attacking into him with stuff, but he had not represented his card correctly with like all the counters that are supposed to be on it. He's like, oh, I forgot. This is supposed to be this, and it's untapped and it has reach. And I'm like, oh, well, like I asked what this guy is. And he said that he's a 3/3. And you're like, no, it's like a 9/12 or something somehow. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess, can I take that back? He's like, no, you attacked into me. And I was like, oh, okay, so it's like that. All right, cool. Fine. Yeah, I attack into you. I lose my guys. You kill me next turn. And then the game three, every time you tried to do a take back, he was like, I was like, no, not this time. What are you doing?
Well, that's what happens when you swing into someone with a 9-12, you know, your stat line.
Yeah, my stat line. but it is when people switch up the rules on you or don't aren't equitable with you with their treatment, like how you're treating them isn't reciprocated. That's not fair. That's not great.
That reminds me of a story during the Final Fantasy pre-release where I was playing a guy and I, you know, as someone who is a content creator, I am much more in tune with everything that has happened in the set. And, you know, he was going to ask a question to the judge about what Sarah Farron flips into. It's like, if this flips, will we still have the power and toughness boost or whatever? Like, if I attack and it flips, what happens? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, Sarah Farron flips into not a creature, so you don't have to worry about it. But he's like, I got to ask the judge about this. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I felt bad about it, right? Because from my perspective, I was just being enthusiastic and helpful. But after he was like, dude, you're intimidating to play against. I'm like, that's not what I wanted from this, you know? And that kind of stuck with me the rest of the round. I ended up winning that game, but it felt like hollow at the end because I took away someone's enjoyment of it. And that's the whole point of this is to have fun. I'm not going to try and grind for like a tournament or anything. I'm not that sort of player. Yeah. So that really sucked, you know? It's more of a dance between everyone involved as opposed to a purely competitive endeavor, you know? It's like you don't want to style on someone in like a sport, for instance.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
Like if you're just far and away better than someone else at some sport, you don't like challenge them to a one-on-one and then absolutely whoop their ass. Sorry, Ken, but it's just like that would suck.
Ass.
That would suck for everybody involved, you know?
Yeah.
I think for some people in this situation, it is like a performative thing, right? So you start out strong, playing against all you guys as strangers, and then it's like, oh, all of a sudden I realize that, you know, Solani and Mike are like really good at this, and I just suck. And I mean, this is all true, by the way. This doesn't have to be a hypothetical.
Oh, come on now.
But, you know, for me, it turns into the thing of like, oh, okay, maybe I've underestimated you, and I need to like lock in now. So I do kind of get a little less frivolous and a little less silly, giving your opponent the benefit of the doubt that way, right? Like, maybe I'm just locking in. Maybe I am just being a little less flippant with stuff, paying attention. And it can come off as being like, I'm starting to get salty, right? And maybe you are salty too. Like maybe there's a little bit of both. But I do think that when you're playing games with strangers and you're just, oh, hey, what's up? You know, blah, blah, blah. You got this deck. How long have you been playing the game for? And you're schmoozing around a little bit. You're friendly. And then it's like, oh, we got, you know, maybe there's no stakes. But for some people, unfortunately, there are ego stakes, whether they want to believe it or not. And you get a little salty when, you know, your opponent and especially a stranger to that extent, like start one upping you a little bit. You might try to look for ways that maybe in the immediate moment don't seem like, oh, well, I want a judge to confirm that or whatever. Oh, are you sure that you can do X? And, you know, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt to think that they are trying to do better and get better at the game. But sometimes people just do be salty. That's always frustrating. We've all dealt with both of those types of people. And the people who just, you can tell, kind of sink, they get more seasoned, I guess is a good way to put it, as the game goes on. Once that salt starts getting poured on them.
I mean, especially if there's like a clear differential between the amount of mental effort that all the players are expending.
Yeah.
Because with experience comes a sort of built-in pattern recognition of certain things. Like, there are times when I've seen people hold mana up, and I know the exact card they're holding it up for, right?
Exactly.
Or, like, I know they're about to tap a certain mana. It's like, I went to a commander night with my neighbor, and, you know, we were playing a game, and he tapped two in a black. I'm like, yeah, you're gonna deluge here? And he's like, yeah, I'm deluging. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing, you know? And when that becomes more of a second nature to you and someone else would not see it that way because they don't have the experience or like the breadth of knowledge to be able to tell that off the top of their head, then it can be very intimidating because one player just clearly does not require as much mental effort to stay in the game as someone else. And it's not like an indictment of that person, but it's still very intimidating.
I'll say to bring it back to the original point that you mentioned, which is like people visibly, mm-hmm. what was it? People visibly getting more upset.
Getting more upset. Yeah.
I'd say
seasoned.
Yeah. I'd say that also comes in the form of like somebody taking out their phone, kind of slumping in their chair a little bit. You know, being distracted, not really paying much attention. All this is like, yeah, it's all under the same umbrella for me, which is like, if I'm done in the game and I have nothing in my hand and nothing's really going my way, yeah, I might want to say something. Or let me see what else is going on in this game. Maybe I have an in somewhere. Oh, is this guy going to win fall again? Well, better commit the permanents I want to keep around to the board now, you know? So, like, there are ways to keep positive. There are ways to, like, try to stay in it. And you'd hope that that works. But, again, it's like, yeah, as much as we like to be like, it's a game. You're invested. You know what I mean? You want to have a good time. You traveled for this. You spent money on this stuff. There's a level of like randomness and variance that you're contending with. And then you're competing against other people, varying degrees of experience and ability. You know, there's a lot up in the air and you're less in control than you'd ever want to be. And so it's fair to be a little disappointed and to kind of show it sometimes, but it definitely can ruin a game night if somebody is continually just like, oh, this again. Sure. Okay. All right.
It's a mental fortitude thing. It's something you have to practice and learn, I believe, because it's very easy to fall into the trap of just showing what you want or showing how you feel. And, you know, like, it's not always great to, like, mask how you're actually feeling, but to some extent, it's a courtesy to the other people in your life that you have the strength to kind of handle this on your own and not make it anybody else's problem. And to be fair, sometimes I do things that I will attempt to not make a situation that's bad worse. Like, I try not to press advantages if I know that I've got a pretty good grip on the game. In my zero cost spells deck that plays X spells for zero and kills a bunch of zero zeros because they have no toughness, I run Grave Pact.
Jeez.
And there are games where I'm like, this is not a Grave Pact game. I'm not going to play this card, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's tough considering most games are not Grave Pact games. You know what I mean? It's such a...
I mean, sometimes they are. Sometimes you've got, like, the guy who's got 10 angels, and you've got to get rid of that.
Sure.
That's a Grave Pact game, right?
I hear you.
You've got to do something about it. But in a lot of games, it's like, no, this isn't a Grave Pact game. I'm going to hold this until it becomes one. You know?
Sure. Okay, fair.
That sort of thing.
Well, do you guys think it's time to take it to a vote? We're going to get to the verdict?
Yeah.
Do I get to vote for myself?
Why not?
Is this like a mayoral candidate sort of thing?
Yeah, why not? Who cares? It's literally, oh my God. It's just, you know, I think we're all going to be on the same side of this. I also think that, like, we haven't done the point system in a little while, and I think people need a bit of a refresher. Morgan, how do you feel about telling everybody how the points work on the voting system?
Well, I'll have to pull up my notes for it because I used to have a script, basically. And
why don't you just ask Grok?
I'd rather kill myself. Sorry, Ken.
That's the world we live in, where math's not real and robots are doing everybody's job. So. But in lieu of that, we do have some math that is real and ready in the voting system, which is that Solani and I are each going to get to have one vote that counts for 1 point.
Excellent.
And, all right, don't interrupt me. Oh, just wait. Fair. Just give me a second.
I'm done talking.
Don't interrupt her,
Mike. I'm done talking.
Carroza gets one vote that is worth 3 points.
Yes.
And that's it. That's literally it. We add them up and then we see which one is the larger of the two sums. And that is the winner.
So Michael Solani, given the context here and the context of you,
the context is important. The context matters.
Can you tell me, how do you feel? Are you the bolus? Yes or no? What do you think?
No, like, of course not. I'm not the bolus. No.
All right. Morgan, how about you?
I'm allowed to be upset that some people get salty.
Yes.
I'm allowed to feel that way.
What about you, Morgan? What do you think?
I am going to toe the line.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Not the bolus.
Not the bolus. I see.
100%. Because I think that the worst games that I have had have been with these people who get progressively over-seasoned.
Yeah.
As the game goes on. And it's rough because then you just, you know, I want to make you happy. Like, how do I make you happy? Yeah. Like, do I just kick off?
Yeah.
You want me to just lose? I'll do it for you if, like, I just get me away from this. Not the bolus.
It's the only way to turn a game with one winner into a game with no winners.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah.
You end up getting to this position where you're, like, the people pleasy, and then also, like, you kind of wreck your night thinking, like, what I do, really? And truly, it's not that important. Like, this is a game, baby. We're playing a game. And so for that reason, I would say not the bolus. However, you did start this episode with a pun I hated. So I am going to go ahead and call Michael Solani.
Can we negotiate
this? You committed
this?
A
Why?
Crime.
Why?
Because I would like you to vote not the bolus for my story, but you can call me the individual the bolus. I would be okay with
that.
We're
not keeping a tally of this online anywhere. It's not like a thing that people are keeping track of. Yet
you don't have the bowl heads or whatever it is, the bowl
the
cuts.
Bowlers, the bowl cuts is so funny.
The bowl cuts is great.
Not the bolus, obviously. For the story and the pet peeve, not the bolus. Come on now. I did hate the pun, but not enough to do that to you.
I don't even remember what the pun
I
was.
I can't remember it.
Would
either,
you like to repeat
it? I remember
it?
How I feel. That'll do it for our time with Michael Solani, and we are doing a little shorty one because we're not doing the bookends on this guy because Michael's going to be back next week doing a mailbag with us. So, Mike, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you? Solani, go.
You can find all of my stuff at the website gamesfreaksa.info. Those are the letters SA. Mm-hmm. I still haven't rebranded. I was complaining about this like a year ago, and I still haven't gotten around to it.
You've been complaining about it since we started the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So gamesfreaksa.info.
At this point, I'm just going to keep going with it.
Good. Well, now you're stuck with it. Morgan, where can people find you?
As per a year ago, I am still Indigo Gentleman, but no longer on Twitter and now on Blue Sky.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at.
Excellent. I am Mike Carozza at MikeCarrozza on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, all the stuff you have out there, all the stuff. I'm also at Am I the Bowlcast on Blue Sky. Give us a follow there. Tell your friends about the show. Listen to our podcast. Tell them about it. And if you're in the Montreal area, come see me at the Comedy Nest. Hosting for Courtney Gilmore July 31st through August 2nd. And then I'll be in Vancouver August 19th through September 5th. So I'll be doing shows while I'm out there, but I'll also be around. If anybody's like, hey, come play Magic. Like, I'm going to be playing with Cole from Heroes Blade Vibe Check while I'm out there and seeing if I can bump into anybody else that wants to throw down for some games. I'm only bringing two decks with me. So don't make me feel like I should have brought more. And I think that'll do it for us today. We'll see you next week, a.k.a. we're going to keep recording the next episode right now. And we're going to say bye to Michael Solani, our guest today's episode. Bye, Michael.
Bye, Michael.
Bye.